Welcome everyone to our online seminar. So it's my great pleasure to introduce today's speaker, Markus Reis. So actually, Markus and I, we know each other for a very long time. So we have been postdocs at the Weierstrass Institute more than 20 years ago. Markus is since 2008 professor for mathematical statistics at the Humboldt University of Berlin. And he is a leading expert for the statistics of stochastic processes, actually for many types of stochastic processes. And today he will speak about statistics for SPDs. So, Markus, the stage is yours.
Yeah, hello everybody. So very nice to have the opportunity to speak here. So thanks to Stefan, Hannah or Crystal and Christian. Actually, I recently came across old pictures, and this was Christian Bender helping us moving our flat. So even besides university, we have some joint experience. And okay, so I will talk. I chose a very general title, Statistics for Stochastic Partial Differential Equations. I will mainly talk about the things that we developed here, but I will have a kind of hopefully gentle introduction, and I will try not to be too technical. So sometimes I will just say under mild regularity conditions, and I mean, we can discuss, but SPDE techniques can become very technical, as many of you know. And I will just try to convey the main ideas, which are kind of interesting, I think. And it's an area that is evolving quite rapidly in recent times. And what I present here is based on joint work with Randolph from Cambridge, Till Brettschneider. He's a physicist from Warwick, biophysicist, and Josef Janak in Pavia, and Gregor Pasemann, who's postdoc with me here in Berlin. Okay, so let's start with something very applied. And this is actually work by Till Brettschneider and his group some 10 years ago. What they are interested in, they're interested in cells moving and how does cell motility work. And he gave a very nice talk on that topic in Potsdam some years ago. And so the idea is they have a cell here, and whenever a cell wants to move somewhere, it produces actin, a protein, and this is marked. Here's a marker in green, which tells you that there's some actin. And so the next time it will move here in this left picture to the top. And what they want to understand is how do cells organize themselves in order to move somewhere? Yeah, so it's not really well understood. And the experiment is here, what is called repolarization. So it's based on chemotaxis. So in a way, they put sugar here on the top and the cell moves to the top. And then they withdraw the sugar and put it on the other side. And they want to understand how fast do they change somehow the actin production and go to the other side. And so you see first it moves up, then here it's moving, not really moving, and then it's moving down, etc. And so I very much like this slide here. They come up with many different interesting PDE models for that, deterministic PDEs, Meinhard-Levchenko, Otsui model. And this is the data they have. What they can measure is exactly this actin concentration on the circumference of the cell. And so you should think here of periodic boundary condition. Here is time, and here you see the concentration. And this is what they measure. And for me, it doesn't look like a solution of a deterministic PDE. So this is where stochastic PDEs enter the field. And just together with Till Brettschneider, we proposed a stochastic version of the Meinhard model, which is a deterministic model plus some space-time white noise. And it's a activator-inhibitor model, which is kind of famous in biophysics. It's a periodic boundary conditions. There's some nonlinearity here in the reaction term. There are some diffusivity here, and okay, so it's a complicated physical model, more or less. And the only thing that we observe is the activator is A at different locations xi on the circumference, and then almost continuously in time. I mean, we can at least do like that. And I asked Till, what is the most interesting parameter? I mean, as usual in physics, many parameters are unknown and everything is a little bit, simplistic. And he said, yeah, if you ask me, and if I have to say something, they would say it's a diffusivity dA. So it's the way the activator, the actin concentration spreads around the circumference. Okay. So, and this is also the guy which is easiest to estimate, as we shall see, and we shall see how to do that later. Okay. So this is kind of an applied perspective where you can really use SPDEs. So they're convinced that there's a stochastic dynamics in this cell movement. And if you look at it, it's a very complicated, very interesting physiological process. But they just don't have the tools to consider stochastic partial differential equations. And so they take deterministic PDEs as a, first approximation. But there are more and more models which are stochastic in cell motility. And perhaps another teaser at the beginning is just some simulation of a standard stochastic heat equation in two dimensions. Okay, so Laplace is a Laplace operator here with Dirichlet boundary conditions. And I have an unknown parameter, which we call theta in statistics in front. Here I have space-time white noise. We'll discuss this in more detail later. And I just look at this stochastic heat equation. And I had here two simulations running simultaneously. And the only difference is that theta is different, what we call the diffusivity. Okay, and if you now just look at these simulations, perhaps you also see that on the right, the heat, the temperature diffuses faster than on the left. Okay, but how to get a quantitative estimate of theta? This is kind of the original goal of this work. And it will involve statistical ideas and a lot of machinery from stochastic analysis and also from deterministic analysis, PDE theory. And yeah, we'll see a little bit what we can do. So, first, I will introduce you to kind of classical ideas for estimating a parameter in SPDEs. And then I will speak about our ideas for non-parametric estimation, which in statistics always means you want to estimate a function, not only a real number. And this will be in the easiest SPDE situation you could imagine. And then I will discuss extensions to more complicated stochastic partial differential equations. Probably more of you are interested in those, but the basic ideas you can really understand in linear equations. And then my latest topic of interest is also coming perhaps in a sense from this physics application. If you discuss with the physicists, they know there is noise in the dynamics, but of course they also have in their data, they have observational noise. And how to disentangle the two and how to work if I have these two sources of noise, what to do. And this gives a very nice mathematical theory. If time permits, I will point this out in the end. So SPDEs under noise. Okay, now let's do some math, which is for people working in statistics of processes, kind of the basic 101 material. But for people in stochastic analysis, I guess not everybody is interested in statistics. So think of an Ornstein-Uhlenbeck process like this, one-dimensional standard Ornstein-Uhlenbeck process. And you want to estimate this parameter theta, and you observe this process continuously on zero t. You write down Gil-Zanoff density, and then you get the maximum likelihood estimator just by maximizing the density over theta, which is just the stochastic integral, the martingale part divided by the quadratic variation. Okay, so this is what you can, if you have continuous observations, this is what you can calculate. And now plugging in the law of x under the true theta, you expand the dxt, you get drift plus martingale part, and then you see this theta hat is actually equal to theta plus a stochastic integral divided up to the parameter sigma by its quadratic variation. Okay, it's a very nice structure. And if you need some nice problems for your next stochastic analysis course, this is something. Because now you have a continuous time martingale divided by its quadratic variation, and you can apply very simple martingale central limit theorem. You can take Dobbins-Dobbins Schwarz-Brownian motion or whatever, and show that this estimator, theta in the stationary regime, let's assume theta is negative, okay, we have a back driving force, that we have a central limit theorem, this theta hat minus theta. So this fraction here is asymptotically standard normal when I rescale it by square root t divided by 2 times absolute value of theta. And the asymptotics takes place when t times absolute value of theta tend to infinity. Okay, so this is the only thing that we show probabilistically for that result is, I mean, you know central limit theorems, I guess, is that this denominator under this asymptotics concentrates around its expectation. You just consider expectation variance of this guy here. You're in the stationary or asymptotically stationary regime, and you get that. What is new or different from the classical ideas is that I don't only consider t tends to infinity, but also theta could go to infinity and t could remain fixed. And we'll see in a minute that this is exactly the case that is interesting for SPDEs. Perhaps I should stop here. If there are any questions, please interrupt me. Just speak up because, I will not see hands raising in some of these panels where I see your pictures because I don't see everybody. Okay, and if it's too slow, you can also, but I guess I'm fine with this speed, but you can also speed me up, of course. Okay, and if you think about stochastic heat equation, this is nothing else but an Ornstein-Uhlenbeck process in Hilbert space. Okay, so it looks exactly the same. Now I adopt here the physicist notation, so I write x dot for the time derivative, being equal to theta times Laplacian of x plus sigma times w dot. Laplacian is just on some bounded nice domain Laplace operator with Dirichlet or Neumann boundary conditions. Theta is positive, sigma is positive, and this w dot is what we call space-time white noise. So it's an isonormal Gaussian process, or put differently, if you test it against L2 functions in time and space, it's just a Gaussian with this covariance structure given by the L2 scalar product. Okay? And this is now how you think about SPDEs. If you're more on SODEs, you can think of SPDEs, the simplest SPDEs, as just infinite dimensional system of SODEs by going to the eigen decomposition. Okay, you take lambda k eigenvalues, e k eigenfunctions of the Laplacian. You know the Weyl asymptotics, they are of the order minus k times 2 over d dimension. And then you can just diagonalize everything. Yeah, and the nice thing is, so you take the L2 scalar product with the eigen system, which is an orthonormal basis. And every coefficient, every Fourier coefficient in a sense, satisfies then this equation here. And so here you get out the eigenvalues of the Laplacian, of course. Here you get out space-time white noise, in scalar product with the eigenfunction. This is just time white noise, just scalar white noise or derivative of Brownian motion, scalar real valued. And xk dot is just the time evolution of the kth Fourier coefficient. So you get this equation. But if you write it not as a physicist, but in the Itô form, then you see it's just an Ornstein-Uhlenbeck process as before. So, and this is the kind of spectral decomposition of an SPDE. And the idea now is, the classical idea is, I want to estimate theta. Okay, remember? But here I have an Ornstein-Uhlenbeck process where the back driving parameter is theta times lambda k. Lambda k is negative, and when k is large, it's huge. Okay, it grows polynomially in the frequency k. So we just apply what we learned before. So this is if we only observe one Fourier coefficient in time, continuously in time, we take the estimator from before, but we divide by lambda k in order to get an estimator of theta. Okay, and we do exactly as before. We get this representation of the estimator, and it's again, the dt should go away here. So it's a dwk of t divided by its quadratic variation. And now what we do is we keep theta fixed, but we allow k to run to infinity, and we get the same asymptotic normality result as before when t times absolute value of lambda k tends to infinity. Okay, it's very nice. It's simple ideas, and The interesting fact from a statistical perspective, but also from a probabilistic perspective, is in SODEs for Ornstein-Uhrenbeck process, you fix a parameter theta, you can only identify or estimate theta when time becomes longer and longer. And you think about ergodicity properties, mixing properties, etc. For SODEs, also for much more general nonlinear SODEs. And here for SPDEs, you can keep the observation time fixed. You need not care about ergodicity, etc. And you go higher in the frequency, and this suffices here because absolute value of lambda k tends to infinity to estimate theta exactly. So I can let k tend to infinity, keep t fixed, and I get in this asymptotic result, I get because here the 1 over the standard deviation then just tends to 0. Well, standard deviation just tends to 0. And so I can identify in principle exactly the true theta. So of course, from a probabilistic perspective, this is a probabilistic audience here. This just means if I take the laws of xt, t over a fixed interval, so xt with values in L2 of the domain, okay, then these laws for different theta are singular laws. You know, they are Gaussian measures, they are either equivalent or singular, and they are singular. And this is more or less also kind of in the back of the mind of people doing statistics for processes, is always when you want to prove nice theorems or for your statistical procedures, it's always easier to look at asymptotics, where in the asymptotic regime, the laws separate in this in the sense that they become singular. Okay, so this is perhaps. When I ask SPDE people in Berlin, not everybody is aware of this. That it's interesting to study this, the law of a solution of some stochastic differential equation under different parameters. Are they singular or absolutely continuous or something in between? And here we see they are singular even for fixed time t, for different diffusivity theta. Perhaps I stop again if there's any question. Okay, so this is the so-called spectral estimator. I mean, of course, it's an idealization that you observe everything continuously, but this is what we are here for in mathematics to understand the basic principles. Okay. Okay, I had a hard time to select some references I wanted to put for statistics for SPDEs because it's kind of rapidly developing to give you some ideas of what people are doing. But the spectral approach was, so the key paper on that is by Hübner and Rosowski from 95, which just introduced that and proved things there. You see, it's a very simple idea, but of course you can then ask how to combine optimally, whether you attain Fisher information efficiency, etc. There are also papers by Ibragimov-Razminsky who look at something different, where an SPDE, where the covariance in front of the noise goes to zero, so you approximate a PDE, a deterministic PDE. And my interest was really raised by this paper by Chalenko and Glatholz in SPA on the stochastic Navier-Stokes equation. So this simple idea that I presented you for a linear heat equation also transfers to something like 2D Navier-Stokes, stochastic Navier-Stokes, and it's kind of intriguing. There are still some open problems also in their approaches, but it's interesting. And then there's a book by Lodotsky and Rosowski on SPDE, some of you might know, and there's a good chapter on statistics, so you can check that out. And if I had to recommend just one reference, I would recommend the survey paper by Igor Chalenko, Statistical Inference for SPDEs from 2018. And then afterwards, still many things developed, and I just put some of the communities that looked at it. So here, Christian Maslowski from Prague, Carsten Chong did work on that. This is our paper, which I'm gonna discuss next. There are papers more applied, but Dan Krishan is, of course, doing a lot on filtering and estimation for SPDEs. Cyprian Tudor connects it very much with Malevin calculus. Hildebrand Trapps very much look at the case of discrete observations, so Matthias is an expert for that. And the very recent paper just accepted by Altmaier, Tiepner, and Wahl is more from a statistical perspective, finding optimal rates of convergence for different parameters, whatever kind of parameters you might think of being interested for estimating in SPDs. And there's a website which is hosted by Randolph and Igor Altmaier and Chalenko, stats for SPDs, and they try to collect all by bibliography, so you can go there if you like. Okay, this was kind of the state of the art. Of course, there's more, but when I entered the field, statistics was very much relying on the spectral approach. And later, we want to estimate a function which is non-parametric, and the operator, which was here theta times Laplace operator, will depend on this non-parametric function and will not be easy to. You don't know the eigenvalues and eigenfunctions because they are unknown under our statistical model, so we need something else. And in order to prepare that, think about why is it possible in fixed time to identify this parameter theta, okay, this diffusivity. And the idea is it's possible the asymptotics where the frequency of the, if you think of the Fourier basis on a square or whatever for the Laplace operator, the eigenbasis, you go to higher and higher frequencies, and somehow there are two parts. You have the white noise, this space-time white noise, which in every frequency is just the same. If you write down the Ornstein-Uhlenbeck process, you just always get a standard Brownian motion there in every coefficient. But the drift, because there's a Laplace operator, there the eigenvalues enter and they amplify the drift the higher you get, okay? So, and I had this vision from wavelet theory, perhaps, that if you go up into the frequency, in the frequency domain, up in the frequency, it's for wavelets, it's like going to a better local spatial resolution, okay? So if you have a better spatial resolution, you should see a similar effect. And this is exactly the case. And this is what I want to present you. This was the ideas of Randolph and myself. So now let's think differently. So we have our, let's say, stochastic heat equation, capital X at time t and space point X. And now we take a convolution with a kernel which has support of length delta. Okay, so let's say radius delta, ball of radius delta is the support of K delta. And we take this around some point x0. So we average x around x0 in space. So it's just this kind of convolution. And just for simplicity, later on, this norming constant will not play any role. Just let's assume that K has a two norm equal to one, and then this K delta, which is a scaling delta, will go to zero at some point, will also have a two norm one. But this is just for technicality. And then I can look at this local average of the SPDE, of the stochastic heat equation, and I just get again here a scalar Brownian motion W delta because of this two scaling here. And in the drift, I get this convolution of the Laplace operator X with the smoothing kernel K delta. Okay, and what we want to do is we want to let delta tend to zero and ask ourselves, can we, based on that, can we somehow construct an estimator of theta as well? And perhaps before we do that, people are always a little bit uneasy about this K delta. So the idea is really, this is not chosen by us, but it's really chosen by the measurement device. So working with physicists, I know, or in microscopy, you have a point spread function. So you have a certain blurring, and this is usually described by some convolution operator. And K delta is exactly this point spread function, so the spatial resolution they can have with their measurement device. So I don't have noise, but I only can measure local averages. This is the applied perspective. If you're an SPDE guy, you would be very happy because this also, or this one here shows, I don't need kind of a strong solution of K delta of X. I just need scalar products. So I can have a weak So in an analytic sense, weak solution by just testing with some smooth kernel function. Okay, so this, when you later ask about existence and uniqueness of solutions, in what sense, we can always work with weak solutions in some sense. Okay, and so the idea is we do partial integration. There was a Laplace X here in the drift. Now we have a Laplace put to the other side. This is possible under convolution. And so if you look now, this is our observation, X delta. This is a local average at a delta neighborhood of X0. And we get this equation here. This is not an SODE as before, because in the drift, this is not X convolved with K delta. This was X delta, but convolved with Laplace K delta. So we have to assume we have two processes. We observe two processes, X sub delta and this drift process here. And then we just what we call augmented MLE. If you write down the perfect MLE, if you think about Kirsanov theorem, you enter some non-trivial stochastic filtering thing, yeah, some conditional expectation. It's so, but it's an approximate augmented MLE. We take the same structure, so we take this drift here without theta. We know this guy. This is what we observe, and integrate it against the increments of x delta. And the denominator, we just take this guy squared. And then if we again replace dx delta by the equation up there, we see what we get out is theta plus martingale divided by quadratic variation. Yes, yeah, so it's the old story. And if you do that, so this was kind of the starting point. You see, in fact, that when delta goes to zero, you also have a central limit theorem, and the rate of convergence is delta. So if you have, you know, you have a blurring, you have a convolution of your observation, but now around one point in space, yet it's very local. It's not like Fourier basis, which goes over the whole domain. So, but it's very local. Locally in space, you take a convolution, and then you observe it in time. This is the only thing that you suppose. Then you get an estimator, which is again standard Gaussian in the end with this convergence rate delta. And so when delta goes to zero, you can really identify theta. And if you see this now from a pure probabilistic perspective, a corollary of this result is that if I look at the law of this stochastic heat equation, weak solution, over some time interval from zero to capital T, and only in a delta neighborhood, delta positive, but as small as you like, around x0, then the laws are singular for different values of theta. Okay, so even the local laws are singular. So if you localize here, because this is the only thing that we use as a statistician, and we can identify the true parameter when delta goes to zero. Okay, so this is nice. You can think about, you know, confidence intervals. If you're a statistician, you like these kind of results. But our actual problem was much deeper. We wanted to get non-parametric estimation. Now we assume we have a diffusivity theta, which depends on the location on small x. So think of a material with a heat conductivity, and you have different materials in one probe, and then the heat conductivity will vary. Yeah, so this is a theta of x, and if you're a physicist, you would put it between the two derivatives, the Laplace operator. And this is what we call delta sub theta. Okay, we take the same SPDE, but now with a spatially varying diffusivity. And as I said before, the spectral decomposition does not work any longer. So we don't know, because we don't know this function theta of x, we don't know the eigenfunctions of Laplace theta. They depend on theta of x. But we can do what we did before. And before we do that, some simulations. So I like videos. This is, I should give credit to Randolph, who produced these. So you could think here of a bar of some material and of the heat, which is just spreading under some stochastic heat equation. Or up here, you will see a video that wherever you are in space, which corresponds exactly to the bar here, it tells you the temperature, okay? And it's zero boundary condition. And I ask you in a minute, where do you think is the heat conductivity larger, on the left or on the right? Okay, so if you go forward, this is a stochastic heat equation. And now I tell you there are two materials in a way, or even more. So the heat conductivity depends on where you are in space. So I go forward, but somebody can perhaps bet. Where is theta of x larger, on the left or on the right? Oh, there's a chat. So I say left. So there's an expert in the audience, Josef Janak, co-author, and he says left. Janak, why? Josef. Anyway, so if you're a physicist, probably you would have noticed as well. It's that you have some summits on the left and on the right, and on the left it spreads faster. On the right it stays a little bit higher, but it's not so clear. But this is exactly the data. So this is, what the simulations I show is really what we fed into our estimation procedure, and we can just look at what we get. So if you have a delta equal to one, this means we just observe an average of this temperature field over the whole bar, from 0 to 1 over the whole space. So it's just a constant, and we just estimate this theta by a constant equal to 2. Now delta becomes smaller. We have delta equals to 0.1, so we get convolution with some kernel which is always minus 0.1 or plus 0.1 different from one central point. And where we are, you see we already get quite a good picture that on the left it's really, I mean, here you see 10 and on the right you see 2, so it's much larger on the left than on the right. And then you are a statistician. I mean, I like this. Perhaps I will go become a little bit more technical later. You see here this thing here, and you might think this is just stochastic fluctuation, okay? But now if you have access to more accurate data, precision, delta becomes still smaller. You see that it even goes down here, and here's some boundary effect, so you're not quite sure. And so the truth was actually really this function here. And you see this well here was actually really present and detected by the statistical procedure. Okay, so, okay. Pictures. Speaking about math, we can, in the non-parametric situation where theta depends on x, what we do is we take exactly the same estimator as before, where we just take local neighborhoods around some point x0, and we just think of theta being constant. But of course, the heat semigroup now depends on theta of x, so it's a completely global process. It's not, I change theta locally, it will have global impact by the infinite speed of the heat semigroup. But still, we are able to show that, an OP result in probability. We can look at this estimation error. And this guy is what is called bias in statistics. Okay, when theta is constant, this is just zero, but when theta is non-constant, it's non-zero. But if theta is Lipschitz, for instance, you see this is of order delta. And if K is even has some symmetry, you can see that these integrals, even the first order even vanishes, and it's even of smaller order than delta. And the variance, or standard deviation part, which is also present in the parametric case, is still of order delta. So altogether, you get the same rate of convergence as in the parametric regime, which is kind of nice, and you get that, and you can retrieve confidence intervals, etc., if the bias does not dominate. So there are many things you can do from a statistical perspective. What I want to show here is a more general result that we actually proved, is that we can have not only a Laplacian, which was weighted by the spatially varying diffusivity theta, we can have lower order terms in the second order differential operator A theta. So first order derivatives and zero order derivatives, transport and reaction terms. And we take the same estimator as before, and it will still, with the same convergence rate, will still converge to the same limit. So the lower order terms from a statistical perspective do not matter at all. So if I don't know them, I can still estimate this diffusivity. Again, if you're an analyst or a probabilist in SPDEs, you know, of course, for the probabilistic properties of an SPDE, the leading order of the differential operator is what counts for most regularity properties, etc. And for statistics, it's in a way the same. Okay, so we look for the part of the operator that mostly affects the solution, and this is the thing that is easiest to estimate. But still, it's a very nice robustness property that we can show. Okay, and we can even have a spatially varying noise level sigma. Even when theta varies non-parametrically, it's identifiable. So we have singularity of laws, even if theta is a function of x, so it's non-parametric. We can, if you now we can estimate at one point, but of course we can estimate at different points, xi. We can have confidence intervals. We can show that the convergence rate delta is optimal. And just three words about the proof is the main idea is when we zoom into the solution by this spatial convolution with a kernel of support delta, this is like by rescaling, by like increasing time from zero to delta to the minus t and extending space from d to delta to the minus 1d, and you get a kind of rescaled process, and you understand everything from that perspective pretty well. So there's even some kind of invariance principle where it converges to when delta tends to zero. And you see the major ideas appearing there. But in order to do so, we need heat kernel and semigroup bounds on growing domains. And we need to control everything asymptotically, and we use, so we didn't find anything in the literature. We asked many colleagues, but you in the end proved ourselves with Feynman-Katz formula and so on, deterministic results on the semigroup on growing domains. And then there's again a martingale central limit theorem involved. And so most technicalities are really analytic there, I must say. Okay, and now perhaps some of you are curious to know what about nonlinear equations, because linear equations is like last century. So what people might be interested in is a reaction diffusion equation. So you have a diffusive part and you have a reaction part, function f here of the solution. Here I put a covariance operator B in front of the space-time white noise. And now look at this condition. So f is C infinity bounded, smooth bounded function, or f is a polynomial with leading coefficient negative. And B is such, so we have colored noise such that the solution has certain regularity in a Besov space. So S times differentiable in an LP fashion. Or something else which attracts usually quite a lot of attention, stochastic Burgers equation in dimension one. So this is in dimension D, which where you have a nonlinearity in the first order coefficient, the first order derivative. To get a squared, you know, this explosive behavior of deterministic Burgers, etc. And here we need a really sufficient smoothing of this colored noise operator B. In all these cases, these authors, Randolph, Igor, and Gregor were able to show that the same estimator that we designed before has the same asymptotic behavior. Okay? So you have now semilinear equations, and if the nonlinearity in the drift is lower order, zero order, first order, and not too strong, then just the estimator still works. So you need not even specify in order to estimate, to use the estimator. The proof is a classical thing if you know about nonlinear SPDEs that you split into the linear part, x bar of the SPDE, of the one up here. And then you look at the nonlinear part, x tilde, which is x minus x bar. And now comes the interesting thing. We always get convolutions with this kernel K delta. Okay, so it's, you can think of the scalar product in space. And now you can just use duality between these Sobolev spaces WSP and the negative order Sobolev space W minus SQ. And if I can control this is the assumption here, but of course you have to prove that it's fulfilled, for instance, in the stochastic Burgers case, So if you have a regularity result on the nonlinear part or the entire solution to your nonlinear semilinear SPDE, you can gain here a factor in delta, which is delta to the s plus d over q minus d over 2. And if this is sufficiently small, smaller than what we would get from the linear part, then the whole theory just extends. Okay. So this is, I think it's very nice because many of you and myself, sometimes we really try to get regularity results for some stochastic differential equation solutions, just as an interesting thing per se. But here it really helps to bound something in terms of this delta quantity, and which makes then something really feasible that you wouldn't be able to do probably otherwise. So it's kind of an interesting idea. Of course, this is all in this kind of what you would call an SPDE subcritical regime. The nonlinearity is really not the overwhelming part of the SPDE. Okay, so this, in a sense, in subcritical SPDEs, you can still apply the same estimator. Okay, then last extension, just want to show the same. I showed you this activator inhibitor model right at the beginning from biophysics, the stochastic Meinhardt model, and we only observe the activator, not the inhibitor, and so we have a reaction term which is stochastic, which we don't know exactly, but we can prove that our estimator works, so provably works, and we can apply it to data. Okay, and if you apply it to data, we can get out an estimate of this diffusivity of actine, which is this one, and we can get even a confidence interval, a 95% confidence interval, which is given here with Gaussian quantized from the central limit theorem. And okay, now we ask our colleagues in physics, is this the correct or wrong or surprising result? And they say, well, it's the right order of magnitude. It's physically meaningful, but it's a little bit, in a way, disappointing because, of course, for them, it's just a qualitative model and they just want to know the order of magnitude. So if you change here from 1.6 to 1.8, their world will remain the same. Okay. So, but still it's kind of convincing. And if you're more an applied statistician, what's interesting is to see how good is it as a model, as an estimator. They have data for different cells, etc., and it's quite robust. So if you take it for different cells or for different time periods, etc., it's a pretty stable estimate. And here up here you see so just forget about the blue line. Just think of the red line. Here you see estimation results. So this is the estimation error on the y-axis. On the x-axis you have the delta, the log-log plot. So when delta is smaller, we should have a smaller error. You see this happens. And this is a linear equation here in red, and this is a nonlinear equation, which is really from this stochastic Meinhardt model. And you see the error is at the beginning larger, but asymptotically it becomes smaller. And the same for the blue curve, it's just a different observation scheme. Okay. And Josef is in the audience. Together with Josef, we also looked at a last extension. This is about multiplicative noise. So it's also for SPDEs, it's quite nice. Here you have this really parametric stochastic heat equation. Theta is now just a real number. And you ask, does the estimator still work if you have multiplicative noise? So solutions look as nice as this one here. I don't want to comment on that, but I like the pictures. And if we know that sigma is continuous and we have a continuous solution process in time and space, which is in an analytic sense weak, so you test it with test functions, but it's in a stochastic sense strong, so it's a pathwise solution, and this is delicate matter in SPDs, as most of you know. But if this is given, then our estimator that we defined before, even now in this multiplicative noise situation, still converges with the rate delta to some Gaussian, but now in the variance of the Gaussian, the process X itself reappears. So what you have is stable convergence in law, if you know this from the book by Jacques Chaillet, for instance. And what you get is that you have a Gaussian independent of this capital X in the limit, such that you get this limiting result. And now applying Cauchy-Schwarz or Jensen, you see that this factor here is larger than one. So when sigma is constant, you get what we had before, but now you get something which is larger. And we can design a better estimator where we don't have this one. And we just get something with this kind of previous asymptotic variance, which is optimal. Okay, but still, it's a kind of very nice robustness property. You design something in a very simple situation and it works. And but things here, because nothing is Gaussian any longer, etc., is also probabilistically quite intriguing. But I don't want to go to that. So the final 5 to 10 minutes are perhaps other questions. So this is, let's say, gives you, I think, kind of a nice picture. One simple idea spreads and can be applied to very many situations. This was somehow the idea of this part.
I have a question, but I can also at the end. I think that's better.
Okay, then I continue. So I told you that people, especially from statistics, were not so happy about this kernel. I mean, for a physicist, it's clear. I observe something convolved. This is just my measurement device, but where does it come from? What properties can it have? And also, from an applied perspective, it's always nice to have measurement noise in addition. And now think of this. You can think of this as a filtering problem, or I see this as a regression type problem. So you have a process X as before, now non-parametrically with Laplace theta here. And but you don't observe X, you observe X plus epsilon times an independent space-time white noise. So this is also from a statistical perspective, an idealization of a regression type experiment where you observe X at some time points, Ti at some locations, Xj, and you have some additive noise variables. Okay, so this is kind of regression. Or you see it as a filtering problem. You do not observe the trajectory itself, but you see you just have a kind of observable, which is Y. Okay, and this is given as X plus epsilon times white noise. And I like it very much. So now we have two sources of randomness. This is, as before, the W dot, which is a dynamic noise, and there's a static noise, which is V. And the idea now is, again, pretty simple, is now this is what is given. Now we, as a statistician, choose a kernel, which we call K epsilon, which it has kind of so in which has a support of size epsilon, which is this measurement noise level in time, and square root epsilon in space. This is what turns out in the end to be the optimal. So this is parabolic scaling, and it should be really of the order epsilon. And if we take convolution of Y with this kernel, then this measurement noise is kind of, you know, we average it out. This is our hope. But not so much that we lose information on the dynamics of the underlying X. Okay, if we average too much, we don't see the time-space dynamics of X no longer in the observations of Y. And so we just think of Y convolved with this K epsilon as a proxy for X, and we just plug into this equation of the estimator that we had before. There's some additional thing in here. When we do this kind of smoothing in time, we lose the martingale structure, and in order to keep it, we have here a time shift in the integrator by epsilon. So we go to t plus epsilon. Okay, so this is a kind of basic estimator. We are kind of here coming to this kind of result that we are have almost published, so submitted. It's almost done, the manuscript. So what we need to assume is theta is beta times differentiable, or beta Hilda. We are elliptic. Theta is bounded away from zero. The initial condition is an LP for some sufficient regularity P. And then an estimator, which based on this basic idea I presented to you, and then still does some non-parametric averaging in the neighborhood of some x0, achieves the following rates in probability. So in dimension one, and if beta is 3/2 or larger, I get epsilon divided by sigma to the 1/2. And I also get it in dimension two, and I only need Lipschitz there, beta equals to one. And in dimensions three or larger, I can allow for a range of values beta, which is in any case, unfortunately, always between one and two. And I'll get this kind of weird rate. So the larger beta, the better I can estimate, but it's kind of a surprising rate. And what is interesting at a, you know, as a take-home message is this epsilon divided by sigma. So when the epsilon is the static noise, the observational noise level, when this tends to zero, I estimate better and better. This is fine. But when sigma becomes smaller, I estimate worse, or put differently, when sigma is large, I have better opportunity to estimate. And the idea is really that this dynamic noise is an energy input in the equation, and I see the action of the Laplace operator or of this Laplace theta much more when x is out of equilibrium. Okay, and the more sigma w dot noise is in the equation, the easier it's to estimate. So this kind of an interesting result. So the last thing I just want to mention is you get these weird rates. Okay, and if you're a statistician, you would say, well, is this in any sense optimal? And the answer is yes. And okay, I have 2 minutes. So this is, let's think of our observation model in an abstract stochastic evolution equation sense. No, just a theta are just some unbounded normal operators which generate some C0 semigroup. And we look at this just in some Hilbert space, okay? It's a stochastic evolution equation. And what we observe is y. Then y is a cylindrical Gaussian measure, and the covariance operator is epsilon squared times identity, which comes from the observational noise here, plus sigma squared times SS star, so S adjoint, where S is just this convolution operator that you have from the mild solution of the SPD. And then you can always bound the Hellinger distance between the laws of y for different thetas, theta and theta prime, by the Hilbert-Schmidt norm of the covariance operators in this sense. So this is well known to some extent for Gaussian measures in Hilbert or Banach spaces. And in this case, I can simplify everything. It looks more complicated, but I get an upper bound for this one. And the idea of statistics is now, so it's very nice. It's Gaussian, and you can control somehow the Hellinger distance for two different parameters, theta and theta prime. And if this Hellinger distance is small for theta and theta prime, this means that the observations are very close in law. And by using some, you know, worst case testing problem that you consider, you can show that your estimation error must be large. Okay? So if your observational laws are close to each other, you cannot produce any estimator which can be very good because the laws are so close. So using all this machinery on statistical lower bounds, information theoretic lower bounds, which is probabilistically really the basis is to bound the Hellinger or Kullback-Leibler distance between the observations. And this is here quite a lot of work to get there, but I don't go into this. You get very nice, you know, you can say lower bounds. So it just means no estimator can estimate better than with this rate. You can look at all kinds of processes and see what kind of rates you can expect. And let's look here, let's keep time fixed. And here you have just an Ornstein-Uhlenbeck process. And you see when time is fixed and theta is positive, this doesn't go to zero. So I cannot even estimate theta. So t must go to infinity. And the influence of the noise level epsilon is negligible when theta remains fixed. Okay, so whether you have observed it with noise or without, it doesn't matter so much. And we were mainly interested here in estimating the diffusivity now as a real number, and we get this rate here, and this is really optimal rate. We have an upper bound, which depends on the dimension, etc. And now you can try to estimate the transport term here. This is a first order derivative or a source or reaction term. It's theta times x. And what you get out, forget about t and nu for a moment, is that diffusivity has a best convergence rate, then transport theta, and then this reaction term theta, which has the lowest convergence rate. And if d is equal to 1, you cannot even estimate it when epsilon goes to zero, and this is Kirsanov theorem for SPDs. Okay, you refined things that you know from standard stochastic analysis, but this is kind of a quantitative version. And because Sascha Gottlitz might also be in the audience, he's a PhD student with me, he's very much interested in this parameter nu when you want to estimate lower order terms. So when this diffusivity nu is small, you can estimate theta here, even when epsilon is when t is fixed and epsilon is fixed, you still can estimate this parameter theta here when the diffusivity becomes. So in the limit, you don't have a second order PDE, but a first order PDE, then you can estimate theta. Okay, much more things to say. You can do everything non-parametrically with a theta of x, but I don't want to comment on that. I'm rather curious to and look forward to some discussion. So let's summarize. I introduce you at this to try to give you a general picture on statistics for SPDEs. Okay, so we started with a spectral estimator for SPDEs and understood some parts there, and it's really always a good basis to understand more. Then I try to convince you that these local measurements are a good tool for non-parametric estimation. We get an optimal convergence rate delta. We are robust to many kind of different models. And then in the last part, we had the static and dynamic noise model. And what I think is kind of intriguing and most interesting for me at the moment are these kind of Hellinger information bounds on estimating different coefficients of an SPDE. This gives you a qualitative picture, you know, what is easier to estimate in an SPDE, the transport term or the diffusivity? And then the answer will be the diffusivity is much easier to estimate from the same observations. Okay, so that's for now. Thanks a lot for your attention, and I'm happy to answer questions.
Yeah.